Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Open up the show with this from Siege. Siege writes, Kevin, did Jaden Daniels get hurt on the roughing the passer play in the fourth quarter? He seemed like a different quarterback the rest of the way. That is interesting because I also had someone else say to me, and actually just... The default was, well, after he got hurt, and this was in the midst of a conversation with a friend, not, you know, a reporter, not somebody with the team or anything like that. Remember, the play in which he got roughed came with 8 minutes and 52 seconds left in the football game. It put the football, by the way, at Chicago's 39-yard line with 8:48 to go, and they were up 24-22. This is a key moment in the game because you have a chance to eat clock, get more out of a drive in which you really haven't been stopped all night long for the most part. You've stopped yourself all night long. And they went with a 1st-and-10 run to Kroski Merritt. Jaden then threw incomplete to Jalen Lane. And then on 3rd-and-10, he was incomplete on that play again on 3rd-and-10. First of all, let me just say this as I went back and watched this. Interesting play calling because of the type of fourth down team they were last year. Meaning you're at their 39-yard line. It's 3rd-and-10. How about a play that just gets you, you know, somewhere near, 4th down and go for it territory? You know, let's try to get into 4th and go for it territory. And they didn't, and they ended up punting. Now, they punted, and it was an effective punt by our guy Tressway down to, you know, inside the 10-yard line, and the Bears then backed up. There was a sack, and then, of course, the 2nd-and-16 to Zacchaeus, my God. That is really one of those plays that I guarantee you we'd be talking a lot more about because it would have come after the Swift touchdown, which obviously was a major turning point in the game as well. But can you imagine on 2nd-and-16 from their own 3-yard line if Zacchaeus takes a pass over the middle with, by the way, Bobby Wagner in coverage and goes 97 with it? Put it this way, he's going to at the very least, pick up 30 or 40, and maybe he gets caught. You know, you guys can tell me kind of and give me a memory from last year where Zacchaeus, like, pulled away from anybody, you know, with great speed. You know, it's not like there's great speed on our defense to begin with. We understand that. But the idea that potentially Zacchaeus, I mean, I, every time I watch this play, I just cannot believe that he is that wide open. But back to Jaden for a moment. They punted on 4th-and-10 at the Chicago 39-yard line. On 3rd-and-10, you've got a play where I don't notice Jaden limping or Jaden looking any different. But what they did come with constantly, you know, on all night long and on that particular play was blitz pressure. And he is under siege immediately, which, by the way, happened a lot on Monday night. They did not handle the blitz very well offensively. So he's looking, though, if you, you know, if you watch the all 22 on, you know, both the second and 10 is a short pass that he gets tipped, remember, by Montez Sweat. And then the third and 10, they're looking for something more downfield, but they don't have it because of the immediate pressure. And, you know, you got basically four verts with a check down and no chance. He didn't look hurt to me. He couldn't escape that pressure because it was immediate. So I it's hard to get a real feel for it there. But the bottom line is, in going back and looking to see if he was hurt, which I didn't find any evidence of, I didn't like the play calling at the 39-yard line. Go get yourself something short, simple, and give yourself the options on fourth and inside five. You know, a field goal would have been a possibility there for 27-22. Or you have lived with Jaden Daniels in fourth down situations, you know, fourth and five or less. And that would have been the part of the field, the 34-yard line of Chicago, where you may have gone for it. But, Siege, I did not see any evidence, really, that Jaden was banged up after that low hit by Brisker. I did not. And I don't think he was asked about it after the game, and I don't think Quinn was asked about it yesterday. If he pops up on the injury report today, we'll know. But I didn't see a major difference. You know, they only had the ball back the one more time. He did take a sack, you know, on that on their last possession, but they ended up getting that first down when he dumped it off to McNichols on third and 13, and he ended up picking up that first down. And that was, of course, before, you know, a couple of plays before the fumble. Oh, there's also a scramble for him on second and nine where he scrambles for 8 yards on that last drive before the fumble. It's actually the play before the fumble. But, man, they had so many opportunities. So many opportunities. We got more today. I've got an upon further review that I want to get to sometime here in this opening hour. We'll give you guys a chance, you know, a day after to weigh in with thoughts. And I think the question really that I want to pose is, you know, 6 weeks into an NFL season, now you can really start to, you know, identify what your team is. Doesn't mean that things can't change dramatically. Injuries obviously impact that. But for the most part now, we have a sense of what this team is right now. I know Philadelphia was 4-2 last year and looked terrible, and then all of a sudden they ended up becoming the best league, best team in the league by the end of the year. And that's possible that you get that kind of a change. But more times than not, we start to approach the midway point of the season, you start to know what your team is. So what is this team? How does this team proceed the rest of the way? I'll give you my answer, because I think it became clear to me in this last game what this team is. And I will get to that shortly. But no, Siege, I don't think he was hurt. If he pops up on the injury report today, you were right. And it would, and more likely than not, maybe it was that hit by Brisker. But he did scramble for 8 yards on their final drive. I just didn't like the way they handled that drive starting at the 39 after the roughing the passer. Not criticizing the play calling, but they didn't handle the pressure up front. You know, they didn't do it all night against the blitz. You would have liked to have seen him get some yards there so you had a fourth down option other than punt. They got the ball back after they punted, luckily, very luckily, to get the ball back. Let me get to a what do you got. So, on Saturday, Delaware State, who is coached by DeSean Jackson in his first season, I think you guys know that, that they are coached by DeSean Jackson. And Clinton Portis is the running backs coach at Delaware State, where right now they are by far and away the number one rush offense in FCS, you know, football conference subdivision football, D1AA. They're in the MEAC with Howard and Morgan State in South Carolina State, etc. They're in that particular league. They are the number one rush offense in college football at that level, averaging 331.1 yards per game on the ground. That's not, you know, a misspeak. 331 is the actual average. But on Saturday, in their game, in Delaware State's game, in which they played South Carolina State, Southern Connecticut State they played, they rushed in a football game for 608 yards. 608 yards. DeSean Jackson's the head coach. CP, Clinton Portis, is the running backs coach. They're the number one rush offense in 1AA college football. They are averaging 331-plus yards per game, and on Saturday they rushed for 608 yards in a football game. They won the game 70-23. James Jones rushed three times for 158 yards. He averaged 52.7 yards per carry and had two touchdowns. They had three backs go for 100 or more. And another back that had an 81-yard run for a score. 608 yards. I'm going to keep track of this because this could be the beginning of a Deion situation. Jackson State to Colorado, DeSean Jackson from Delaware State with his staff, Clinton Portis included, to some, you know, big job next year or the year after. Now, they are 4-3 as a football team. Jackson State, I think, had more success, also had a couple more years. They've lost a couple of very close games, and they still have, you know, their MEAC schedule, most of it to go. But they can run the football. I always thought that Clinton Portis would be an excellent coach. And we'll see if he goes beyond just a running backs coach. He obviously can coach running backs. And they have maybe a big advantage up front. But 331 rushing yards a game, 608 last week, with three backs at 100 or more. We'll monitor Delaware State going through the rest of the season. The MEAC schedule really starts now for them. There are six MEAC schools, and they finish with the five MEAC games. So we'll see where they finish in that league. Howard's in that league, as mentioned, but they are 4-3 overall. They opened up with, you know, a game at Delaware. Delaware's, you know, one of those powers at that level and have been. You know, they play a couple of D1 schools, you know, division schools. They had Colorado in week two, Delaware did. But they lost that game 35-17 in the opener. But Delaware State, even against that level, rushed for 200 yards in the game. And it was a close game heading into the fourth quarter. Delaware State, DeSean Jackson, Clinton Portis, they know how to run the football. That's for sure. All right, I did want to quickly talk about last night's baseball game because I watched the Dodgers-Brewers game too. And Yamamoto, the pitcher for the Dodgers, became the first pitcher in 8 years in the postseason to pitch 9 full innings, a complete game. It was actually riveting to watch because he gave up early home run in the game, a first inning Chirio home run, leadoff home run. And after that, he gave up no runs and 2 hits and walked 1 batter the rest of the way. It was such a precision attack, and they outlined it during the game last night and even this morning. This guy Yamamoto can hit anything. He'd be deadly in darts. Every single a target that Will Smith, the catcher, gave him, he hit over and over again. Just barely in the strike zone where the ball was borderline unhittable. And the Brewers didn't hit him. 9 complete. In this day and age, for a pitcher to pitch a complete game, it's unheard of. Again, the last one, Verlander, back in the American League Championship Series 2017, in Game 2, he struck out 13 in a 5-hit win over the Yankees. It's been 8 years. since we've had a pitcher in the postseason pitch a complete game. I understand what baseball is, but I'm old enough to remember complete games. And last night, it was awesome to watch Yamamoto pitch. Awesome. I do know, and I'm learning this because I don't follow a lot of the baseball during the regular season like some of you do, that the Dodgers have, you know, a real weakness, and it's their bullpen. So they're trying to steer clear of the bullpen with excellent starting pitching. Snell pitched game one, pitched eight, and gave away for Trinan in the ninth. And by the way, that was a bit dicey because Blake Trinan, former Nat, has not pitched well in the postseason. And he got he walked a batter and then got the last out in what was a close game. But Blake Snell struck out 10 and 8. So I was watching early this morning the MLB Network, the postgame show. I don't know who those guys are. I know Pedro Martinez is part of the group. That's an excellent studio show. Max, look up who the host of that is. That guy's excellent. Also, I'll just mention Brian Anderson, who does the play-by-play on TNT, and he does a lot of other play-by-play. He does some college hoops. He does some NCAA tournament games. He is so good. Does anybody else recognize that? Am I late to the party on Brian Anderson as a play-by-play guy? Do you know who he is, Max?
Honestly, I'm not entirely sure. I've been watching the games. He hasn't jumped off the screen to me. That's how
He's excellent at everything he does. College basketball, I've noticed him before. In fact, I think he called one of Maryland's games in the tournament. It may have been the buzzer beater by Derrick Queen. And if it wasn't that, it may have been the Sweet 16 loss to Florida. But he is excellent. He's unbelievable doing baseball. But the studio show is great. Is great. I mean, look, TNT's longtime NBA show, best ever in terms of studio shows, and now it's moving to ESPN. But the MLB postgame, and I've watched a lot of it during the playoffs, is a really, really well-done show. I like it. I mean, look, for me, I like baseball this time of year, and I end up learning a lot about these teams now, you know, because I'm not paying attention as much during the regular season, especially when our team is so bad. I think I'd know more about some of these other National League teams in particular if the Nats had had a good season. Of course I know Otani. Of course I know Betts. Of course I know Freddie Freeman and Christian Yelich. There are names in this series I'm very familiar with and players that I'm very familiar with. Max Muncy, by the way, who had several good games against the Nats for the Dodgers in the multiple playoff series against Washington. He hit a homer last night in the sixth inning to give them a 3-1 to give the in the ninth inning to give the Dodgers a in the seventh inning to give him a 3-1 lead. He became the all-time home run postseason leader for that franchise, Max Muncy. But man, he has been over the years a clutch October performer. But the studio show is great. This series is great. I guess the Dodgers, if their starting pitching holds up the rest of the way, I would assume that they, you know, have a really good shot to end this series. They're going back to L.A. for the next three, I believe, up 2-0. I guess the key for the Brewers is to get to their bullpen. You know, we did see Clayton Kershaw's bullpen appearance last week against the Phillies. That was hard to watch. But baseball's good. Seattle won the first two in Toronto. Man, that crowd's good. The Toronto crowd. We get one game today. We get the American League, and then I think we get three straight days of two games per day. Tomorrow night, by the way, 41-year-old versus a 40-year-old in Thursday night football. 41 versus 40. 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers against 40-year-old Joe Flacco. And if you don't know, Flacco's first game for Cincinnati, all you got to do is listen to T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase describe it. Higgins said, man, that dude can sling it. He basically threw for 200-plus yards and two touchdowns in the second half, and they were a completely different offense in terms of what their capability is than they were with Jake Browning. But this will be the oldest QB matchup since we had Brady and Breeze going at it three times in the Bucs Super Bowl season with Brady. They met twice during the regular season, and then, of course, they met in the postseason. They played each other, remember, after Brady and the Bucs came here in 2020 for a playoff game against old Taylor H. And then the next week was New Orleans, and that was a really good game. And that's the last matchup between 40-year-old quarterbacks before tomorrow night. That is a big game in the AFC North, the division that right now really is the worst division in football. I mean, that is a change, clearly. But Pittsburgh at 4-1, and with no Joe Burrow, Cincinnati's in second place with two wins. And then you get Baltimore and Cleveland at 1-5 each. If Cincinnati at home can pull off a win tomorrow night with Flacco against Rodgers, they're going to be in it, you know, and there's still no word as to when Joe Burrow will come back, if he'll come back, but they made this trade because they thought Flacco could keep them afloat. And they've got three straight home games against Pittsburgh, the Jets, and Chicago. And to keep them afloat, they got to win two out of the three. You know, they got to be somewhere around 4-5 after the next three games, and they'll be in that division race, especially if one of them is against Pittsburgh. You know, I was looking, by the way, at just some of the, you know, they make these schedules, obviously, in April. And it's tough, man, because Cincinnati, this is the first of three primetime games that they still have left on the schedule. There's going to be some flexing involved down the stretch. They've got, you know, Pittsburgh here on Thursday night. They've got a Thursday nighter on Thanksgiving night. I guess that can't be flexed, right? I'm pretty sure Thanksgiving night can't be flexed.
No, I don't think you can flex Thanksgiving games.
Yeah, so Cincinnati-Baltimore is the Thanksgiving night game. And then they play Miami later in the season on a Sunday night. Unless Burrow's back, that is flexed right now. But you've got some of those situations, and this is where you can't predict these things, like Baltimore and their remaining schedule. They still have, you know, prime matchups left. Miami, you know, Miami was given some of these games. I mean, you know, the Dolphins are an underdog at Cleveland this coming week. I'm going to go out with my bold prediction for the week. I think that don't be surprised if this is Mike McDaniel's final game as head coach of the Miami Dolphins. With all the crap that's happening with, you know, Tua's disastrous press conference, calling out teammates for not showing up for a players-only meeting, they're 1-5, and they're going to Cleveland as an underdog. If they lose to the Browns and Dylan Gabriel, I predict he gets fired. I think that's your lead story on Monday morning, is that Mike McDaniel is fired. By the way, they have a Thursday night game against Baltimore. They've got the Madrid game against us. They've got a Monday nighter against Pittsburgh. They've got a Sunday nighter against Cincinnati. There are a lot of flex games coming up, you know, as we get later in the season. They can't predict Baltimore, Cincinnati to have the injuries and to stink. I don't know why they gave Miami all these games, but they did, and they're going to have to fix that. But there's my, you know, don't be surprised if we do that segment occasionally on this show. We have it planned to do every week. We just don't always get to it. Don't be surprised if Mike McDaniel's coaching his final game in the NFL on Sunday as a head coach for the Miami Dolphins. Cleveland's a 2.5 point favorite. Cleveland is favored in a football game over the Dolphins at home. By the way, Washington's line against Dallas is now down to 1.5. It was 2.5, down to 1.5. And I do think that these next few games, you can justify Monday night being about the turnovers more than it was about the defense. But if they were to lose a 35-31 game to Dallas and then, you know, a 37-33 game to Kansas City, I don't know that we're just there yet, but I don't think we're that far away from changes defensively. And by the way, that's wide-ranging. Personnel changes, and yes, maybe even play-calling changes. I don't know anything, and I'll tell you the same thing I've been told, you know, multiple times, most recently last week. It's not just one thing. It's a lot of things. But you go out there and you put up, you know, an offensive performance that's worthy of winning, which you did not do because of the turnovers on Monday night. But if you take those turnovers away and you lose to Dallas's offense 35-28 or 42-35, and then it happens again, I think all of us at that moment would be wondering why changes aren't being made. Of course, it's the NFL. They could go out and lose on Sunday 13-10, and we could be blaming the offense. It's the way the NFL works when you least expect it. Logan Paulson will be our guest at 11 a.m. on this show. We'll go NFL buy and sell when we come back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to do some NFL buy and sell here? Let's do it.
We can. Get that computer working?
No. I don't have very good computer work right now. It's not working very well.
Here, everything's
computer.
You
going to hit computer. That sounder?
I can. I was waiting to see if we were going to do it because of the internet,
let's hit it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, it does. I don't know how they did these shows back in the day without the internet. It is not easy to do without the internet, and I have no internet for some reason right now. Although the stream's working, so tune in if you want to the Team 980 YouTube channel and hit the subscribe button and hit the like button when you get there. So I'm buying the Atlanta Falcons right now to be a legitimate contender for the postseason. I'm a big Michael Penix Jr. believer. He had that terrible game against Carolina. He's now put back-to-back games together that have looked very good. Man, he's got some weapons, and he's got an offensive line. Drake London and Bijan Robinson are legit stars. Drake London has really... You saw it last year when Cousins was playing before Penix Jr. got in late, you know, when they were kind of out of it. Drake London had by far his biggest season last year with Kirk, and now with Penix Jr., he is thriving, as is their run game. You know, you heard all these complaints about they're in the pistol too much. It's too easy, too predictable. Yeah, you know what's pretty predictable is if you give the ball to number seven, Bijan Robinson, he's got a chance to take it to the house every single time he touches it. They also have a really good backup running back in Tyler Allgeier. They've got a defense that's on the attack with Jeff Ulbrich as their new defensive coordinator. I don't know that Atlanta catches Tampa, but Atlanta's going to be there with Tampa. They've already lost once. They lost the opener to Tampa when Koo missed a field goal before they cut him loose in the opener. The Falcons are legit. And by the way, that's not good for us because if we get into one of those tie-breaking situations at the end of the year for what is going to be a crowded situation in the NFC playoffs, I'm convinced of it. We are going to see a lot of teams in the running in the NFC. You're going to have division races that are close in the NFC West, in the NFC East, in the NFC North, maybe with Green Bay, Detroit. And then for wild cards, I mean, there are going to be two teams out of the West that are going to be in the running. There's going to be at least one out of the South that'll be in the running. There will be at least one, if not two, in the North. Every team in the NFC North is above 500. Above 500. You know, I read something where if Washington had won the other night, there would have been more 4-2 teams without an undefeated team through 6 weeks of the season in NFL history. The Patriots are 4-2. The Bills are 4-2. The Jags are 4-2. The Chargers, Broncos, Eagles, Lions, 49ers, Seahawks, and Rams are all 4-2. I mean, you just have a lot of teams bunched up now. But the fact that Atlanta has a chance, and I think they are legit, to be in the playoff mix, that's not going to be great for Washington. You don't want Chicago to get into the mix either. You know, division is the goal, obviously, and then you don't have to worry about tiebreakers with anybody in terms of wild card spots. But Atlanta has a very interesting Sunday night game coming up at San Francisco. The 49ers are once again experiencing an unusual high number of injuries in their season. This is a big, big football game in the NFC. Falcons at 49ers Sunday night. And then they've got the Dolphins. They've got, you know, they still have the Saints a couple of times. They've got the Cardinals. The Falcons are going to be in this thing all season long. And I know people are raving about Drake May. And by the way, he's played great. And I like Drake May. I did not like him as much as Jaden, nowhere near as much. Didn't like him as much as I liked Caleb. I didn't. Didn't like him as much as I liked Penix Jr. But I like Drake May. Sabah, that's for you. Sabah likes to say that I never, you know, I downplayed Drake May. I always said I like Drake May. I think Drake May's got a chance to be a good quarterback. I just never would have taken him before those three guys. That's all. She likes Drake May, not the biggest fan of some of the others. She just likes Drake May, which is fine. And I get every single nugget that anybody says about Drake May, video or tweet, sent to me in my direct messages. I know you love him. He's good. The Falcons, I am buying as a playoff contender, and I'll go a step further, as a playoff football team in the NFC. And that could be as a division winner, too. I'm not handing that to Tampa Bay quite yet. It's a shame they didn't get the opener against the Bucs. They had a chance to get the opener against the Bucs. But the Falcons are legit. And by the way, let me just add, Bijan Robinson, he's in the conversation for MVP right now. What are you buying?
Man, it's tough. It's a tough market out here because a lot of the teams, we're kind of entering that separation point. But I'm going to buy, I bought Sam Darnold last week. Give me some Jackson Smith and Jigba. Because if Puka Nacua's injury against that he suffered this past week is as serious as some may say, because I think he's dealing with like an ankle sprain of some kind. He says he's going to miss some time. Could be a little bit like the CeeDee Lamb thing. If Puka misses multiple weeks throughout this season, JSN has a good shot at winning Offensive Player of the Year. At the beginning of that game, when Seattle was playing, Sam Darnold had like 117 passing yards, all of which were to Jackson Smith and Jigba. He has cemented himself as the wide receiver one in Seattle. He took that next step. A lot of people had some questions going into this offseason. Give me all the JSN stock in the world right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's great, but we knew that, right? We know how good he is.
I think there were questions about him being able to step up.
When you like go out on a limb and say, you know, Igbuka is going to be a superstar quickly, and Tampa is going to win, is going to be the one seed. That's your best prediction so far here, 6 weeks into the season.
So
and
far,
you made
so good.
That before the season started.
So far, so good on them.
Yeah. Jackson Smith and the Jigba is a player that we all know is really good. I guess you could come back at me and say, yeah, everybody knows Bijan Robinson's good too. You know what, though? Before Washington played Bijan Robinson a few weeks ago, and I was saying, just for those of you who only watch our team, understand we are playing maybe the best running back in the league this week. And, you know, I had people say, oh, come on, dude, Derrick Henry, Saquon, McCaffrey. No, Bijan is in that conversation. And I love his running style and love the fact that he is a complete football player. So you could come back at me and say that was sort of obvious too. But I would say that I'm not sure a lot of our fans before we played Atlanta knew how good London and Bijan were. I do want to buy one other quick thing before I sell something. I want to buy the Carolina Panthers, okay?
They were also in my consideration for being
Hear
bought.
Me out.
Then
Hear
I looked at the schedule.
Yeah. I want to buy the Carolina Panthers as a team that basically was predicted just a few weeks ago to be in the running for the number one pick in the draft next year. As a team that wins no less than 8 games and is actually a team that is mathematically alive for an NFC playoff berth late into the season. I'll tell you what, man. Canales knows what he's doing. He can coach quarterbacks. He can coach offense. They run the football. They are physical up front. Bryce Young is thriving with a running game and an offensive line, and they get after you defensively. They really get after you defensively, which is, by the way, I'll bring this back to Drake May. The Patriots hammered the Panthers a few weeks ago, and May didn't even have to really throw the football. He was like something like 13 of 16 or something like that on the day. I mean, it was an absolute avalanche by the Patriots. Now, in that game, there were, you know, just a couple of, you know, just barely missed big plays for Carolina. But it's crazy how in the NFL a couple of weeks ago the Panthers are terrible. They're going to get the number one pick. You know, it'll be them or the Jets or, you know, or Saints. And now they're a 3-3 football team with the Jets up next. They're not a bad football team. They're not a bad football team. They're going to be in it for a while. That's the other thing I wanted to buy. Go ahead. If you've got something else to buy, go ahead. If not,
so I kind of this is a little bit of a buy, a little bit of a sell. I saw Ben put out something last night that was a little bit actually really intriguing to me. So Brandon Coleman's been out and being held out for it's not health related, but play related. I could definitely see Washington putting him in some sort of trade package with the deadline coming up. And one team that is a little bit has kind of struggled on their offensive interior, the Miami Dolphins. Cole Strange has been fine, but their left guard's a little tough, and I think Brandon Coleman could fit in. Excuse me, fit in there just nicely. But Washington needs a wide receiver. We could move a few picks around as well. Give me Jaylen Waddle. I'm gonna buy Jaylen Waddle for Brandon Coleman and picks before the trade deadline. That's what I'm buying.
Yeah, I mean, Miami's definitely going to be more of a seller than a buyer. The way you started, I thought you were like, they're looking to add. But no, Jaylen Waddle, yeah. I mean, Washington needs another receiver on this team. But what they really need is they need somebody that can get stops on defense, whether that's in coverage or as a pass rusher. They need that. All right, I'm going to sell something here that is going to go against the way I think about this team fully healthy. And I'm doing it because there's just something that's a bit off with them, and I can't figure out what it is. I think the Rams are so talented, and fully healthy. I've been saying all year they're one of the three best teams on paper in the NFC with Philly and Detroit. You know, Washington not that far behind, I was saying before the season started. You know, the rosters aren't really that comparable. Why are they struggling with, you know, in all of these games? You know, they blew the big lead against Philly and lost. They beat the Colts, but they were really outplayed by the Colts in that game. They lost to the 49ers, and the 49ers came into that game completely completely decimated injury-wise. And I'll tell you what, they went to Baltimore, where Houston a week earlier put 44 points up on the board against the Ravens, and the game was 3-3 at halftime. 3-3 at halftime. They won the game 17-3, but they basically needed turnovers to score. I don't know what's going on with them. They one of their touchdowns was after a fumble, you know, they set them up at the Ravens 20-yard line. Other than that, they punted a bunch. They're off for some reason. Now, Nacua got hurt in the game and left the game for a while and ended up with his least productive game of the season, and that was a factor. But how did Baltimore, you know, who couldn't do anything offensively or defensively the week before? I mean, Derrick Henry went for 5 yards a carry against that Ram defense. They rushed for 180 yards against the Rams. Okay, they only put up 3 points. That was because of the turnovers. They just had 3 turnovers in the game that hurt them. That game was much closer than the final score indicated. I don't know what's going on with the Rams. They play the early London game on Sunday morning against Jacksonville. The loser of that game is going to look a little weak coming out of it. But the Rams are not hitting on all cylinders right now, and I don't know what the answer to that is. And it makes me believe, by the way, that Seattle, a team that you've been on, is definitely a possibility to win the NFC West, for sure. What are you selling?
Selling? I kind of have another buy.
Go ahead.
I'm going to take this buy here. So some stats have been coming out from the Monday Night Football game last night. Separation score has been kind of the top of the conversation, or at least top of my mind, as of late. And there's one guy who had really good separation score last year, is on Washington, and had a great separation score against Chicago.
Luke McCaffrey.
That's right. Give me all the Luke McCaffrey stock possible. He's an incredible kick returner. I just need the offense to give him a shot. Leading, it's really frustrating to me when people say he can't separate, and then you look at the numbers and it's very clear, black and white in your face, that he's getting open. It's just not materializing for him. It's going to break eventually. I will ride or die on this train until the wheels fall off. Give me all the Luke McCaffrey that is out there. I want to be the number one. I want to overtake Denton as the number one Luke McCaffrey supporter in this building.
At least you're getting some anytime touchdowns.
Finally.
All right. We'll go Washington upon further review. I have something that I didn't talk about in my breakdown of Monday night's game that I want to talk about when we come back. We'll do that next. Logan Paulson at 11 a.m.
All right, happy Wednesday, everybody. Here's what's happening. The Washington Commanders are bringing in former Titans wide receiver Treylon Burks for a visit. Burks was released by the Titans after suffering a collarbone injury in the preseason. Now he's fully healed and visiting his potential suitors. To postseason baseball, the Dodgers, they beat the Brewers by a score of 5-1. Yoshinobu Yamamoto throws all 9 innings, giving up 1 solo shot from Jackson Chourio in the first inning. Then he locked in, and the Dodgers' bats rolled from there. The Caps, they get the win in overtime versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. Logan Thompson saved 17 out of 19 shots. Caps went in overtime 3-2 on a goal from Jacob Chychrun. That was on our sister station 106.7 The Fan last night. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1. You can catch Denton's Office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us, and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
In Paulson coming up at 11 a.m. Had a conversation with Logan yesterday. I want you to hear it today on the show. So I think in going back, and I don't think I emphasized this enough yesterday after the game, I was, by the way, felt it on Monday night, man. Pissed. Really, really pissed that they let that one get away. Especially considering what's coming up. It's one of those games I think I hope we don't have to look back on and say, you had to get that one. You had to get that one. And still, you know, going back and watching that final defensive drive was repulsive. Truly repulsive. I don't know how Dan Quinn did it. I don't know how Joe Witt Jr. went back and looked at the Bears' final drive. A third and five, and it's just way too easy to Loveland for 6 yards. And then to watch DeAndre Swift run it right off the edge, two different runs of 10 and 15 yards, when you know they're running the football. They're trying to make you use your timeouts. They want a walk-off field goal attempt. They don't want to give the ball back to number five. They don't want to have to, you know, have a super long field goal. They want you to, they want clock burned, timeouts burned, and there was zero resistance to the Chicago Bears in a spot in which it would have been nice had the defense actually stepped up for once in a year and a half and bailed the quarterback out after his mistake, the fumble. But it was literally, it looked like they laid down. Of course they didn't. And that, I guarantee you, made them throw up in their mouths watching that final drive. A 10-yard run off the edge. They pitched it to him. I mean, they were so confident that they took the risk of just pitching it to him in the backfield and just untouched for 15 yards on a second and 12 after Caleb Williams, you know, got sacked there by, you know, stopped on a scramble. I mean, that was hard to watch. But the thing that, upon further review, that I didn't mention enough yesterday, and I should have. You know, I said Jaden was really good other than the turnovers. It wasn't just that he was really good. I think what we saw on Monday night was an example of something we've talked about for many months now. An example of Jaden Daniels elevating average talent around him to offensive success. It's hard to say that on, you know, the day after or 2 days after a game in which he had two critical turnovers that cost them. The last one really cost them the game. Now, it's possible that the Bears could have gotten one more possession after a field goal or after a punt and gone, you know, if they didn't fumble. Real quickly, too, upon further review, Kroski Merritt on the exchange, if it's a smooth exchange, I don't think he gets the first down there on third and one. There was penetration. It's why they were able to recover the fumble so quickly. They were in the backfield. The defensive penetration didn't cause the fumble. The exchange, Jaden not having a grip of the football, caused the fumble. But the reason it was recovered so quickly is that they were there, and I think Kroski Merritt gets nailed for no gain or even a one-yard loss, and they're faced with like a fourth and two in that situation. But what was really evident in going back and watching the game is that, you know, the emphasis on adding talent. Tunsil's had a good season so far, okay? Debo's had a good season. Debo didn't look right to me the other night. And that's part of the reason I'm mentioning this, is that the other night they didn't even have what appeared to be a fully healthy Debo Samuel. And you've got Chris Moore and Jalen Lane and Luke McCaffrey, and they're fine, but you don't have anything great around you. You still don't have, you know, arguably your second best offensive lineman, Sam Cosmi, in the lineup yet. By the way, I think he'll be back this week. That's my prediction. I think we learned that today from Quinn, is that they are going to activate him and that he's going to have a chance to play on Sunday. And I would guess that he goes in for Wiley and that Chris Paul stays right where he is. A, right guards his position. B, Chris Paul has played too well. I don't think they're going to pull him. But I think what we saw the other night, it's hard to say this after three turnovers and two of them by the quarterback, but that's the example of how great Jaden Daniels is. He didn't have much around him, certainly nothing elite around him. And yet, you know, this was a team that was able to generate a lot of offense, points, didn't require the other team to soil themselves to get points. They moved the football drive after drive. They just had the turnovers. You know, the turnovers were crucial. The interception was bad. It was a late throw. But they have no chance of winning that game Monday night without Jaden Daniels at quarterback. His performance, if you just take one of the turnovers away, especially the last one, was an A-minus, B-plus performance. He was great. He was incredible as a scrambler. Had an 18-yard run, 15-yard run, rushed for 52 yards in the game, almost all of it scrambles, because the Bears took away all of the option runs, the zone reads. And there really weren't any designed runs. There wasn't a quarterback draw. There wasn't a quarterback counter in the game. You know, a designed run is that. You know, an option run is the zone read, where he's got the option. They were playing back and Jaden with sometimes eight in the box. And they took that away from him the other night. Not all teams have been able to do that. The Bears did that. Give the Bears credit. They changed during that bye week. They played defense completely in a different way than they had played prior to the bye week, which was always something we contemplated. You know, the numbers were the numbers, but what if the Bears play it differently? They should play it differently, and they did. But Jaden Daniels elevated that team. And one mistake at the very end, and then, you know, no resistance from the defense, cost them the W. But we saw it all last year. But we also had Terry McLaurin, a high-end number one receiver, on the field. And they didn't have any of that the other night. And yet that offense, as it did in L.A. against the Chargers after the first two drives, is elevated to a level in which they can definitely win games with average talent on offense. They can. Biggest concern, though, is what they are defensively. I talked to Logan Paulson about that yesterday. You'll hear that conversation next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.